Soul singer Bobby Womack died 2 weeks ago at age 70. On the next Fresh Air, a 1999 interview with him. He was discovered by Sam Cooke, who first recorded him. Womack's hits include the theme from Across 110th Street, Looking for a Love, which was covered by the Jay Giles Band, and It's All Over Now, which was covered by the Rolling Stones and became their first international hit. Join us.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
The second annual Cufflinks and Pearls fundraising gala is back. Join Ha'ani July 26th at 6 p.m. in the Jordan Creek Center for A Night in Monte Carlo. Hosted by Marty Duncan, celebrity chef from the Next Food Network star. Catering by Salt and Suwana Thai Cafe. And fun with casino games, live music, performing arts acts, and more. Tickets available at 586-9251. Brought to you by the Ha'ani Community Development Fund.
And welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll talk with historian Kathy Ruddy about a fabulous French expedition. We get a preview of Warriors, one of the three plays being staged at by Perseverance Theater as part of Summerfest. Greg Chaney will be here to highlight his new film about the Empty Chair Project. And we'll also talk with Catherine Hatch with Arts Up, as we do every Thursday. Writer's Almanac and more here on a Juno Afternoon. And first, tune into National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Monica Brain. The National Museum of the American Indian is celebrating its 10th year on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. Matt Laszlo reports on recent celebrations.
The National Museum of the American Indian here in Washington was first opened to the public in 2004. Since then, more than 80,000 people from across the country and globe are estimated to have passed through its doors, which is why school children came out to wish it a happy birthday this week.
Happy birthday!
In 1980, the Hay Foundation in New York City housed over 800,000 artifacts representing a multitude of Native tribes and communities, which the Smithsonian later acquired and turned part of it into the museum here in D.C. It's the newest addition to the Smithsonian Institution. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
The Interior Department is offering trial advocacy training. People from across the country recently attended a session in New Mexico given by the Office of Justice Services. Tristan Ottone has more.
Simon Tuck is a lawyer with the New Mexico Legal Aid's Native American program. He says while this training is primarily based on Navajo law, he's enjoyed hearing stories from people around Indian country.
I wanted to see what other people were doing in other jurisdictions. I mean, we have 19 jurisdictions, different sovereigns that we potentially could be working in, and to just have people from all over the country here and to see what they're doing and how is just incredibly useful.
While Tuck works for Legal Aid, he's not a spokesperson, but says one of the biggest issues he runs into is providing criminal defense on New Mexico's 19 pueblos. With many traditional laws not written down, he says it becomes a huge challenge to provide services to clients when there's nothing on the books to study. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Ottone.
A new movie theater in Bethel, Alaska, lit up its screens last week on Independence Day. It was the grand opening for the Sugavik Cinema, the only theater for hundreds of miles in the vast stretch of the state. KYUK's Charles Enoch was there.
A long line of excited moviegoers are ready for the first big screen viewings in Bethel for over 30 years. Bethel resident Ronald Jennings Jr. says it's a big deal for him.
It's like
one of the first movies that I get to watch in a movie theater. Only did it a couple other times, and that was in Juneau, so I'm pretty excited for it being here in Bethel and that they had the courtesy to bring anything like this to a rural area.
The theater is part of the Gibuzvi Complex, a local investment by the Bethel Native Corporation. President and CEO Anna Hoffman opened the theater with a ribbon-cutting ceremony. She presented BNC board members, who used traditional uloks to cut the ribbon. After buying their tickets, customers move into one of the two theaters with their snacks. Most adults and couples chose the comedy, 22 Jump Street, but Alexis Kinigak of Bethel chose the children's adventure.
How to Train a Dragon 2. It was fun and a little bit sad.
Alexis's mom, Yvonne Kinigak, says she was an employee at the last movie theater in Bethel, the Swanson's Theater, which closed in the early 80s.
It feels really good to be in Bethel and watch a movie. I used to run the movies at the old theater, so it feels really good to have a theater back here, a place to hang out for the kids, and it's just exciting, so I'm very happy.
Surwik is the Yupik translation for movie theater. Surwik Cinema will be open weekdays in the evenings and will begin operations early in the afternoon on weekends. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
A bipartisan group of U.S. senators have introduced legislation that would provide tax benefits for Native American and Alaska Native adoptive parents. The Tribal Adoption Parity Act would allow Native parents to claim full adoption tax credit when adopting a child through a tribal court. This is National Native News. I'm Monica Brain.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. It's Thursday, July 10th, and I'd like to welcome to the studio Captain Philippe Fichet de Lavaux and historian, local historian Kathy Ruddy. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So you're here to talk about something that's really special and unique for Juneau, and it's the 1786 La Perouse Expedition. And Kathy, I was wondering if, for those people who don't know about this expedition, could you talk a little bit about it?
Well, 228 years ago, the French expedition under the command of La Perouse sailed into the unique bay that is just on the outer coast called La Touya Bay, and it was the first glimpse of Europe for the people living there, people with the international, like a trade market there. And it was a significant expedition for the French. It was an around-the-world expedition. It was to last for 3 years. And so we like to celebrate the first Tlingit-French connection, and our little organization here just is so delighted to host these 8 visitors from the La Perouse Albi Association, which is the birthplace of La Perouse.
So, Captain de Lavaux, how did you get interested in this particular story? Because you have a history yourself with Alaska.
Yeah, being a seaman, so it's as a second nature to be interested in the explorer. And when I was told by a friend, John Baldry, who's pilot here, that La Perouse came to Alaska, so of course I was very, very interested and integrated. And I've been sailing in Alaska between 2001 and 2009, so I had a lot of time to have a lot of friends and to go deeper and deeper in the knowledge of La Perouse, what he did, and so. And because the approach was quite unusual for this time, period of time, because this expedition was launched by the French king, Louis XVI, in the direct line of the Enlightenment century, with the philosophers Voltaire and Rousseau. And this was a very particular approach for an expedition. It was the first time it happened in these conditions. And what was very interesting as well, this is all the description that Lapérouse did from his stay in Lituya Bay that lasted almost 1 month, where he could describe people, he could describe the traditions, the language, the songs, and so. And as we were talking with the friends during the lunch, this was the very first time there was a dictionary Franco-Clinket.
Oh, interesting. And Kathy, how did you kind of discover this expedition, and how did you get on board with this?
The instigator is our mutual friend, John Baldry, who is a pilot on the cruise ship. Philippe is a captain on the cruise ships, but this mutual friend and Philippe were sailing by Lituya Bay and suddenly realizing that Philippe's countrymen, 220-some years ago, had sailed by. And so John Baldry and I had worked together with the 200th anniversary of the Vancouver expedition. And so I think John Baldry came and said, we should start Lapérouse Association here, because Lapérouse is a very, in France, they're very, very proud of this explorer. And there are maybe 40 or 50 places around the world where he's remembered. So we started this little association here in Juneau. I think that was like 7 or 8 years ago, and Philippe invited us on his cruise ship, or that he was captain of at the time, the Seven Seas Mariner or the Navigator, I forget which. Yeah. And you know, from then, and Jackie Schopert, my co-chair of this Alaska committee, came on board at the same time, and so we've been having very engaging exchanges ever since.
And so this is actually also part of a weekend of festivities and information for the public. And could you talk a little bit about what's upcoming for this weekend?
Yes. Tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the university, free and open to the public, a lecture by Captain Fiché de Laveau here and other members of the French delegation, describing who was Lapérouse and why was he important. And I think it's titled Lapérouse Meets the Clinket, a French Perspective. That's the first event. And then there are two more on Monday, July 14th, which just happens to be Bastille Day. The French will consider their Independence Day. At noon on Monday, July 14th, we're at the State Historical Library on the 8th floor of the State Office Building for a brown bag at noon. And then from 3 to 10 p.m. that afternoon, a community-wide potluck for the French in celebration of Bastille Day. And it's at the main shelter at the Auk Rec campground. And the Doug Chilton and the One People Canoe Society is going to pick up French paddlers in Auk Bay Boat Harbor, and then they're going to paddle around to the Auk Rec Center and then be welcomed. And then we're going to celebrate with some presentations and some good food.
Sounds great.
And good wine also.
That's very French.
Yes, very French.
What was in the, you know, the historical work you've done and around here, what was the meeting between the Lapérouse and the Tlingit people in Lituya Bay?
Well, I'm wishing Jackie Schopert was here, but I will do my best to stand in. And that when these two large vessels with billowing white sails entered Lituya Bay, people were awestruck. They had never seen sailing vessels before. It was what I call their first glimpse of Europe. And they were perplexed, you know. And the first meeting was, well, I'll let you know, please come tomorrow night at 6 o'clock and you'll hear more about it. Lapérouse wrote in his journals the story, and then Kawa'i told the story to Emmons, and the Ducting-Tan people have the same story. It's a first contact between the local people here and the Europeans who sailed right in. It's a complex story. It's a demanding story, and I hope that people are very interested in it. I hope they can come tomorrow night at 6 or to either one of the events on Monday to learn more about it.
Great, and that's tomorrow night at 6 p.m. at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. That's room 112 in there. This is an event sponsored also by UAS.
Yes, and thanks to UAS for that sponsorship.
Yeah, so is there, you said that you've got, letters and you've got all sorts of, background information. Is any of this information published or?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes. AlaskaLaPerouse.org. Sorry, I should have said that. www.AlaskaLaPerouse, LaPerouse.org is a website that Captain Philippe here has created, and it has all sorts of wonderful and interesting information about La Perouse, the expedition, and then also the activities here in Juneau.
And one thing that is very important for us as a French to come here, it's because on July the 13th will be the celebration of a sad anniversary, as this expedition, this French expedition, lost 21 of their crew members. 21 of crew members passed away. They were drowned in at the entrance of Lituya Bay. So I would say that our destiny is a little bit linked with the ones of the Tlingit, because Tlingit lost a lot of people as well in Lituya Bay, as the French did also. So we have a common point to commemorate our ancestors who passed away in this very, very dynamic bay, as I suppose everybody knows here, the activity of Lituya Bay with the tsunami and so on. So that's why, as French, we are a little bit we are touched by this presence of La Perouse in this bay, because this was 10% of his members who passed away in a very quick moment. And I would like to add that, of course, it was a huge shock for the entire expedition. And amongst the French delegation, we have the pleasure and the honor to have Jean-Marie Pestel with us, who is a nephew of a grand nephew of La Perouse himself. So this is coming here for us has a lot of meaning. It's a meaning of meeting the Tlingit and knowing their culture, to celebrate their culture, to celebrate all their knowledge and so their respect with nature and so. And this is as well to commemorate together this event.
One more time, Kathy, would you mind telling us the events so
of course.
We can get them?
Tomorrow night at 6 at the University Egan Lecture Hall, plenty of parking, free and open to the public. There'll be a presentation by Captain Philippe Fichet de Lavaux here and other members of the La Perouse Albi. And then on Monday, July 14th, there are two public events. Noon at the State Library, Historic Library, the 8th floor of the SOB, and then from 3 to 10 p.m., a community-wide Bastille Day potluck. Please come and bring food and drink and join the celebration. The canoes will be arriving between 3 and 4 p.m., we expect, and then there may be a short presentation about 6 o'clock. But we hope that everyone will come and join the French in celebrating Bastille Day.
Thank you so much, Philippe and Kathy. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Shona.
Thank you. Ahead of me.
On board, I'm a captain. So climb aboard. We'll search for tomorrow on every shore, and I'll try, oh Lord, I'll try to carry on.
And thanks for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, July 10th, and in the studio with me, I have the best job in the world, Dave Hunsicker, here to talk about Warriors.
Hello,
hi.
Shona. Hi. Glad to be here.
Thanks for coming. Yeah. So Warriors is a play that you wrote and directed, and it's a part of Perseverance Theater's Summerfest.
Right.
And I was hoping that you could tell us what is the inspiration for Warriors, and what does it mean to you?
Oh, it's kind of 40 years worth of stories I've collected from Alaska Native veterans and history books. Many years ago, I had a job interviewing elders. This is back in the 70s. I was interviewing elders who from the Aleutian Islands, or ones who had been part of the Alaska Scouts out in the battle for the Aleutian Islands. And they were just kind of astonishing stories. And I got to go to the places where I got to go to Attu and Kiska in the course of all that. So those stories have been in my mind for a long time. So part of the play is set in 1943. It's prior to the invasion, the U.S. invasion of Attu, to try to take it back from the Japanese. And has some people who played a very gallant role in that were guys that were became known as Kastner's Cutthroats because of their kind of unusual appearance. They were mostly Alaska Native guys, or people who had were subsistence hunters, fishermen, trappers, that sort of thing. And they were assembled by a guy named Colonel Kastner, and they were part of the intelligence. And so they were out there mapping the islands and essentially living off the land. And many of them were Alaska Natives. So that's one of the stories. And then the other story is set in modern times, 2003, during the invasion of Baghdad. And that features two Alaska Native women soldiers. So these are fictitious characters that are in there, but then woven through the play are four stories about real historical Alaska characters. Two key figures at the Battle of Sitka in 1804, one from World War II and another one from a very obscure but fascinating skirmish in 1856.
So you yourself are a veteran, mm-hmm. and so I imagine, does it hold a different kind of meaning for you as far as warriors go and what that means for you?
Well, I think that this has really been my attempt at doing an homage to Native warriors. I think it's a complicated thing, and that every veteran, every soldier faces all kinds of dilemmas, just about every kind, political, moral, you name it, you know. But there's something to me particularly poignant and interesting about Native soldiers, partly because just because of the complexity of the relationship with the government, I think, and the fact that there's a huge amount of patriotism out there, the fact that there's also some ambivalence about the historical relationship. The play doesn't purport to answer any of the many questions it raises, but it does raise a lot of questions. For example, at one time, one out of eight Native American men had either were in the armed forces or had been in the armed forces, and that's a demographic unlike any other. There's nobody else even comes close to those numbers. So why, you know? And so that's kind of what it's about. So there are surely some things I've drawn on from my own experience, but not so much. I mean, mostly it's been about stories that I've been told and people that I've gotten to know and become close to and just heard their stories over the years.
Yeah, we have a clip here that I'd like to play, and I was wondering if you could set that up for us.
Yeah, this is there's a character in the play named Polly Panagwach, who's a young Yupik woman from a fictitious village in the YK Delta. And she's relatively new. She's an E-1, so she's pretty new, and she's in a real place called Camp War Eagle, which was one of our bases outside of Baghdad, and this is in 2003. And this is played by Mary Lou Asiksik Rock, who we're very fortunate to have with us, who herself is an Inupiaq actress from Shaktulik. And in the clip you're going to play, it's just a scene that she does by herself where she's writing a letter home to her little 2-year-old girl, whom she calls Imujik.
And this is a clip from Warriors.
Dear Imujik, I'm hoping Daddy will read this to you, and if there are some parts you don't get just quite yet, maybe Daddy will put the letter away and save it, and you can read it for yourself someday when you're a little older. Right now it's real noisy over here, but I feel quiet in my heart when I think of being back home and holding on to you real tight when you go to sleep at night. I don't know who's making all this noise, them or us. Probably us. Seems like we're the ones with the most stuff, it seems to me, but I don't know. They don't tell us E1s too much. My friend Katie Ann Sam, she's an E5, and she always seems to know what's going on better than me. Someday I will tell you all about the great ancient Yupik warrior, Apanuchbak. They say he wore a magical armor made of mussel shells that an arrow or spear couldn't pierce. I've got something on like that right now, only it's made of Kevlar. It keeps Mommy safe, no matter what the bad guys try to do. The bad guys. You'd probably think Mommy looks real funny, like a turtle or a dinosaur, like she's trying to be a Apanuchbak. I sure miss you, little Imujik. And Anurgaluk, and Daddy, and Grandma Junie, and Alaska. Alaska, so much. And you know what else I miss? The animals. The seals, and the muskox, and the bears, and the caribou. They've got animals here, but they're all tame and seem sort of sad. I don't know how to say it. Goats and chickens, but they're all dried out and starved and beaten. Kind of like the people here. The ones we're at war with. Or the ones we're saving. I used to think I knew which was which, but it's gotten real confusing over here. Maybe it's just because I'm an E1 and don't know nothing. Okay, baby, Mommy's gotta go. Tell Daddy to stop reading this letter right now and give you a great big hug from me. The kind of hug the way you remember, with me all soft and cuddly in the calico kusbuk Anurgaluk made for me. Not sharp and hard, like Apanuchbak, the warrior. Not me as a soldier in armor, in a far, far away place in the desert. I love you, Imujik. Read this again someday, especially if anything. Read it again. Love. Mommy.
And that was an excerpt from Dave Hunsicker's play Warriors, the character of Polly. And Dave, I was wondering, that is an actress named Mary Lou Rock, and I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the cast of Warriors.
Yeah, it's a wonderful cast. It's we'll mention Mary Lou Rock, who's from Shaktulik, but who I actually met in Los Angeles. He's been doing some work, film work down there. The part of Katie Ann Sam, who's kind of a tough career soldier in 2003, is played by Katrina Hotch, who's from Cluckhorn. And Katrina is a veteran, and it's been very interesting having her as part of the cast. The two young men who are from the 1943 and who play two of Kastner's cutthroats are Charles McHenry, who plays a guy called Black Jack Packer, who's a Tlingit Kitsadi from Sitka. And then we have Corey Joseph, who's from, I hope I don't butcher the name of his village too badly, Quigilingak, Yupik village out west. And Corey plays actually an Anangan or Aleut guy named Ignati Shelikov Jr. And then we have a fifth member of the cast who's not Alaska Native, and that's played by Takahiro Yamamoto, who some people will have seen in The Blue Bear. And he plays, We call him the prisoner. In 2003, he's an Iraqi prisoner, and a larger part is in 1943, he plays a Japanese prisoner.
You know, the letter we just heard Polly writing to her son is quite moving, and it's interesting because this play goes, it goes everywhere. I mean, it's moving, it's funny, it's intense at certain times, and I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about just the juxtaposition of all those things.
Well, it's been really interesting. It was a very interesting thing to work on, and maybe this is where I drew from experience a little bit, is that soldiering in certain circumstances is very often a combination of incredible intensity, terrifying intensity sometimes, and hours and hours and hours of boredom. And so one thing the soldiers do is sit around and talk a lot. So we have quite a bit of that, and some of the scenes rival, Beckett probably for being just kind of ridiculous conversations about how to smoke a cigarette backwards, for example, so the enemy can't see an ember burning. You stick the ember inside your mouth. Some of it is pretty funny. It's all based on true stuff. Like I said, it asks a lot of questions that it doesn't try to answer. It is, I hope. I hope it's entertaining. There's something that's wonderful is some music that was created by Ed Littlefield, who's a Tlingit jazz musician who lives in Seattle and makes his career as a musician. And he has created a wonderful palette of music that's based, well, it's all original, but it's or much of it is original. There are one or two traditional songs, but he begins with things that sound like traditional dance songs and kind of are, and then he takes them off. He plays the trumpet, for instance, and the violin, and he uses those instruments in it as well as other Western instruments. So it's quite, as you say, it's quite varied. It's sort of, I guess, all over the map is another way you could say that.
In the best way, of course.
Thank you.
The Warriors is playing as part of Summerfest, and that's downtown at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. And this is part of a three-play series that's happening, along with Blue Bear. We've got Blue Bear and Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. And Warriors is one part of that. So this is plays done in rep. You can catch one of these shows now through August 6th. And right now, matinees, so before 6 p.m., are pay-as-you-can. So if you can catch a pay-as-you-can matinee performance, you can. If you're local, it's all good. That's a great way to see the production.
We really want local people to come see this play. All of them, really, but this one particularly.
And we've just gotten calls almost every day that say, oh, we just love Warriors. So definitely go check it out. You can get tickets, ticket information at perseverancetheater.org, or you can call 463-TIXS. Dave Hunsicker, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Shona. Likewise.
Thank you so much. And what a wonderful play. Thank you for writing it and directing it.
Thanks.
And here is Writer's Almanac for Thursday, July 10th.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 10th of July, 2014. It's the birthday of the city of Dublin, we believe, founded in 988. That was the year that the Irish king forced people to pay him taxes. So Dublin has belonged to the Irish ever since, though there were people there before that. The Vikings settled it around 831. The name comes from the Irish words, which mean black pool. The City of Writers, Jonathan Swift, Samuel Beckett, George Bernard Shaw, James Joyce, Yeats, Patrick Kavanaugh, Oscar Wilde, Sean O'Casey, and many, many others. Brendan Behan said, when I came back to Dublin, I was court-martialed in my absence and sentenced to death in my absence. So I said they could shoot me in my absence. J.P. Dunleavy said, when I die, I want to decompose in a barrel of porter and have it served in all the pubs in Dublin. It's the birthday of Marcel Proust, born in Autun, France, in 1871, author of the 7-volume Remembrance of Things Past, which is translated more literally as In Search of Lost Time, Proust's own life story, which he wrote and published between 1913 and 1927. It's the birthday of the short story writer Alice Munro, born in Wingham, Ontario, Canada, in 1931, author of stories set in provincial Ontario towns. Her latest collection, Dear Life, was published in 2012. And it's the birthday of the theologian John Calvin, born in Picardy, France, in 1509. He was raised Catholic, studied law and Greek in addition to theology, was a brilliant young student, and then, sometime in the 1530s, John Calvin experienced a religious epiphany, and he broke his ties with the Catholic Church and embraced Protestantism, a dangerous thing to do. In 1534, 24 Protestants were burned as heretics in France. And when John Calvin became a minister in Geneva, Switzerland, he did the same to other people. He exiled many people, executed 58 people for dissent and heresy. Calvinism, which believed in total depravity of man, unconditional election, limited atonement, irresistible grace, and perseverance of the saints, which all spells the word tulip, and which means that every person deserves damnation. We're all sinners, but God in His mercy has chosen some for salvation. If you're not chosen, nothing you can do will earn you salvation, and if you are chosen, nothing you do will take that salvation away from you. Here's a poem for today by Gerard Manley Hopkins, Pied Beauty. Glory be to God for dappled things, for skies of couple color as a brinded cow, for rose moles all in stipple upon trout that swim, fresh fire coal, chestnut falls, finches wings, landscape plotted and pieced, fold fallow and plow, and all trades, their gear and tackle and trim, all things counter, original, spare, strange, whatever is fickle, freckled, who knows how, with swift, slow, sweet, sour, a dazzle, dim, he fathers forth whose beauty is past change. Praise him. Gerard Manley Hopkins' poem, Pied Beauty. And that's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And you're tuned in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, July 10th. And in the studio with me, I have local filmmaker Greg Cheney. Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's wonderful to be here.
Awesome. So you've been working on something that is just really, it's quite beautiful and moving, just the project in itself. And you've come out with a new documentary, but I'm wondering if you could talk about, because it's based on the Empty Chair Project. And right. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the Empty Chair Project.
Well, the Empty Chair comes from the story of John Tanaka, who was born and raised in Juneau. He was born in the 20s, but he grew up in Juneau, and he graduated from high school here. Well, he was supposed to. He was a valedictorian of the class of 42. And in 1942, all the Japanese Americans in the west coast of the United States were sent to internment camps. So it was a month before his graduation, he was told he had to leave along with the rest of the family that also ran the city cafe. It's just a footnote. And so the high school put on a special graduation ceremony just for him before he left. And then when the actual graduation happened a month later, they had an empty chair sitting prominently displayed on the stage to symbolize the fact that he was gone. And it's actually quite a bit more of a story than that. I mean, that's a nice, beautiful little gesture, but you have to put yourself in the time. This was World War II at the beginning. The United States was losing the war. Most people forget that. We kind of think of the World War II in Japan and the mushroom cloud, and Japan is in, you know, in ashes. The beginning of the war, they took out Pearl Harbor. They invaded Alaska. They took thousands of U.S. soldiers prisoner of war. Many of them were tortured to death. The United States was not winning any of the sea battles at that point in the Pacific. And it's in that, and then the United States was interning all the Japanese Americans on the West Coast. And in that environment, the school board here made a decision to publicly acknowledge the injustice of the internment.
That's huge. I mean, at that time, it's just a huge thing, too.
John Tanaka was one of our own. And for him to be taken away for national security reasons just made no sense. And it was pretty impressive. I've been very fortunate and been able to interview a lot of people firsthand. Unfortunately, John Tanaka passed away many years ago. So I don't have any interview with him. We've got lots of photos and memories of him. But his sister, Alice, was 8 years old or 9 years old when she was interned, and so she has very vivid memories. Her sister, Mary, was 2 years old when she was interned, which, for me, this is part of the irony of the internment is, as a measure for national security, they send this two-year-old to a prison camp. And that's kind of that's basically the level that it whole operated at. It made really no sense. But they give wonderful graphic descriptions, although they're very nice people, so it's not as gritty as it could be. And it's mixed in with a lot of original 16-millimeter color footage of Juno at the time. So you get a little window into the past. Most of this footage, well, none of this footage has been shown publicly in Juno before or ever anywhere. So it's an exciting thing just to be able to see this footage. And then also I interviewed people of the Fukuyama family who ran the Juno Laundry, which is right across from the Baranoff Hotel. The building's still there. It says Juno Laundry 1930. And Walter Fukuyama and Alice and Mary are all here in town now, and they'll be there at the premiere. So the exciting part for me is, beyond showing the film, is having the people that were actually interned, who were born and raised in Juno, there on the stage to answer questions after the show.
That's huge. So you've got a full length. This is a full length documentary.
Yes, it's
a
feature length. It's just over 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And this shows for the first time tomorrow, correct?
Tomorrow, yeah, noon, an odd time to have a premiere. But the Gross Alaska Theater was very generous in allowing us to use their facility tomorrow at noon, so it doesn't conflict with their regular schedule. But it's a wonderful theater, and I had a test screening there the other day, and it's very impressive to see on the big screen with a really nice sound system. And so it'll be great to see it there. If you're not able to be at that noontime, which obviously a lot of people won't be, take a long lunch if you can squeeze it in. But if you can't, it'll be showing at the Gold Town Nickelodeon at 7 p.m. on Saturday. So, you know, that I would ask people to show up early for that because it might overflow. We're not charging admission, just asking for donations.
And this is all part of, on Saturday also, so along with the screen filming tomorrow at noon at Gross Alaska 20th Century Twin, there's also, on Saturday afternoon, there is this dedication of the empty chair that will be in place. Could you talk a little bit about
that? Right, and there's, this is kind of where things got started, and I kind of got involved after the monument was being formulated. So the real core of the empty chair project as a whole, and there's several people that from Juno that have worked really hard to make it come together, but it's will be a bronze chair in Capitol Park, Capitol School Park, and it'll be dedicated at around 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. And we'll have several of the internees here for the dedication. So that's going to be a pretty amazing event as well.
So it's a packed weekend, and yes. Which is great. You know, yes. You can see the film. Mm-hmm. You could see it twice if you wanted to.
You could see it twice if you wanted to. And I've had, actually, at my test screening, the people there were looking forward to seeing it again. They really responded well. So, you know, as a filmmaker, you're always wondering how your test screening is going to go. But there's a lot there. There's a lot of locals here, too, that were not Japanese Americans that were affected by the internment that are in there. Mary Lou Spartz is featured, as well as Marie Darlin and a couple of other local folks, talking about what it did to the local community. Because when you do something like that, pull a family or two families along with several other people out of a community, these are people they went to kindergarten with. it has a big impact socially, and it's nice to hear from. It's not just the people that were interned that were impacted; it was the whole town. And the community really, as well as it could, you know, this was a war zone. It was classified as a war zone back then. There wasn't a whole lot they could do, but the community supported the families that were interned as much as they could. And when they came back, and that's the most important thing, is they were waiting on the dock and welcomed them back. Other places on the West Coast, there were signs put up saying, Japanese do not come back here. And it was a very different kind of a event. So it's a pretty poignant story.
As a filmmaker, how do you set up the history of, I mean, is it rare footage? Is it old footage? Because mm-hmm. there's a lot of story there. I mean, not only do you have to set up World War II and Japanese internment, but you also have a very local, I mean, how do you go from global to local in something like this?
Well, and that's my challenge, obviously. I don't know. You know, come and see if you think I did, how it worked out, you know. But I'm start locally and go globally has kind of been my direction here. The people that were from Juneau ended up, John Tanaka ended up in the 442nd, and he was in Italy in World War II. So anyway, he volunteered after being interned. His family was in internment camp. And Walter Fukuyama volunteered, was turned down while he was in the internment camp, and then he was drafted. I love that.
Wow.
But anyway, he was sent to Japan, and so he was part of the Army of Occupation. So it's pretty easy to go global because these guys are born and raised in Juneau, went to kindergarten here through high school until they got interned, and then they're off in the war. And then they came back to Juneau, and then, you know, what happened when they got back? That's another big part of the story. And I think that's what makes it worth telling is what happened when they got back.
Right, because it gives everybody somewhere to go, for
yes.
sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you mentioned some interesting footage that you received or that you had access to that
mm-hmm.
made it in there. I was wondering if you could chat about that.
Well, Mary Lou Spartz's father, in a very unusual way, he was shooting 16-millimeter color film before the war. And so there's some a little bit of South Franklin. There's some beautiful shots of the mine, one that was in operation, and this is all in color. And so when you look at the Army footage, actually I use a lot of newsreel footage, too, that kind of go with it. It's amazing how much better his footage is than the government-issue footage of the day. So it's sort of hard to realize, oh, this is 1942, and I actually put that up there a couple times just to remind people this is not the 60s because it looks like, you know, color film from the 60s. And so it's very cool. It's like a time machine. So if you like old Juno, it's probably worth just coming down to
see that.
Yeah.
Could you give us the times one more time?
Sure. Tomorrow, the big premiere at noon at the 20th Century, and then 7 p.m. on Saturday, which is at the Gold Town.
What is the film called?
The Empty Chair. Oh, it's very original.
Well, really, how are you going to stray?
Yeah.
Well, Greg Cheney, thank you so much. Is there any information that people can get online about this project that you know?
Yeah, The Empty Chair has a website, and if you just Google Empty Chair in Juneau, it'll come up. And there's also a museum display that goes along with this. And I actually have if you really like old Juneau footage, I have a little silent movie that runs with the display, and it's about 10 minutes long, and it's just footage of old Juneau, and it's fun to see if you like that sort of thing.
You know, I just have one more question
before we go.
I know. What are you working on next? Because I know you've got tons and tons of projects always kind of stoked here and there. So I was just wondering what's up next for you?
Oh, I'll probably do something with my the couple that walked from the Aleutians to the or from Seattle to the Aleutians, Hig and Aaron. Their kids are growing up, and they're doing some more expeditions with them. And a couple of years ago, I went on the Malaspina Glacier with them, and I took that film to Banff. So I would like to go on the Northwest Passage. They're talking about going up on the Northwest Passage. I'd like to do a film, but this time I'd like to do it from the kids' point of view because they're getting to be about six, and I just want to I want to film the kids and their perspective of the trip and not have the adults talk at all. So we'll see. That's my next goal.
That sounds like a good time. Greg Chaney, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
And thanks so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, July 10th. And in the studio with me, I am the luckiest lady ever. I have Sandy Fortier, and she is the acting
yeah.
executive yep. director at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Hi, Sandy.
That's right. Hi.
And this is Arts Up.
Yes,
so,
Arts Up.
Yeah, what's going on this fabulous week in our Fairtown.
Well, you know, there's always a lot going on arts-wise.
There's so much.
Yeah.
I can hardly keep up.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know about Perseverance is doing Summerfest at the Jack, so they're pretty much there every day. So you should check out that any day you want, two to three shows a day. So I won't tell you every time they have a show, but you should go online and check their schedule out. But I'll mention it here and there.
Cool.
Yeah. So today, some things we missed a little bit, but I'll skip to tonight if you wanted to go. Oh, I want to mention the Juno Public Libraries has a summer reading program every weekday from 5:30 to 6:30. So if you have kids, go down and do that. Tomorrow, 12 to 1, the Friday organ concert at the State Office Building Atrium. State Office Building Atrium.
Yes. I love them.
Me too.
The organ concert so much.
Last time we went there, they were playing pop music.
What,
that was fun.
Like Michael Jackson on the organ or what?
Yeah. I can't remember what it was, or maybe it was like Broadway tunes or something. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So that's from 12 to 1. That's free. And then, of course, the Empty Chair documentary is tomorrow that you just talked about downtown at noon. And then tomorrow, Friday, of course, it's Food Truck Friday at the Jack. And there's music from 5:30 to 7, the Empty Oil Barrel Band. Misha is doing classical guitar and Brian Graceland, contemporary and traditional Christian music. So that's from 5:30 to 7 is the music, but there's food, a bunch of food trucks at the Jack starting at 4. And if the weather is nice, I don't know.
You just gave the stink eye to the weather.
I did.
That was funny.
I know, I'm looking out the window. Come on, weather. We'll have if the weather's nice, we'll fly a flag for the mosquito market. You'll see a big red flag, and then you can come down and sell your junk out of the back of your car and somebody else's treasure, I suppose. So that would be in conjunction with Food Truck Friday. That's tomorrow. And tomorrow night, Dan Hobson is playing at the Baranoff Hotel, and there's a Perseverance play. So tomorrow's busy. Saturday, I guess there's an Oyster Fest this weekend.
There is?
Yeah, which I always walk by it, and it looks really busy. And
is this the Alaska Oyster Fest? I didn't even hear about it.
I think so.
Oh, oysters.
I know. Yeah. So that's this weekend.
Great.
And the Canvas has some classes. Wheel throwing looks like on Saturday. And then, yep, again, Perseverance plays. Gonna get there. Sunday, there's a ukulele jam. They have that every week at the TK McGuire's Lounge. So come check it out or join in. And Sunday night is Music on the Fly at the airport.
Who is it?
It is Travis Croteau.
Yes. Cool.
And guitar. Ooh, that'll fill the space nicely. Mm-hmm. So even if you're leaving or coming at the airport, check it out or just drive out there and get some free music. Okay, where are we on Monday, the 14th? There are a few Canvas classes. You should probably call and make sure that they have space for those. And then some Perseverance plays, so there's that Monday. Tuesday, History Storytime at the Museum is free at 11 at the City Museum, of course, because the State Museum's closed. All right, we have three shows for Summerfest. And then at 1:30, you could stay at the City Museum if you want, take a walking tour with them.
Those walking tours seem really great. I haven't been on one, but I feel like I should walk around the town and learn something new about where I live.
Yeah, I agree. I bet we would all learn something new.
Yeah. We should do that.
Yeah. Okay. Everyone's going to show up to that now, and they're not going to know what to do. Okay, Wednesday, July 16th, from 10 to 11, Write for Your Life at the Mendenhall Valley Library. I don't know much about that, except it sounds like a really cool title.
It does. It sounds like it's life or death writing, which is an interesting
yeah.
kind of concept. I imagine it has something to do with biography typewriting.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you think? If I was to put a guesstimation.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was hoping it was something different, though.
It's medical writing.
Okay. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's Wednesday, July 16th, and the Alaskan is having some music later that night, 7 to 9. And then we're back to Thursday again. This is next Thursday. We have some Summerfest plays and the Jump Film Festival at the Goldtown Nickelodeon.
That's right. So actually they're accepting submissions. I think they might still be accepting submissions for the Juno Underground Motion Picture Society. The Jump Film Festival, always the greatest, you know, time. I love it. They do it twice a year and it's just so much fun. You see just a variety of all different kinds of films and short films, long films, crazy films and serious films. Yeah, so that's very cool. Check that out. You can probably Google that and get all their information.
Yes, definitely.
And Sandy, where can we find this calendar if people are looking for it?
Okay, go to jahc.org, and we keep a pretty up-to-date. It's like a Google calendar, so you can actually just sync it to your Google calendar, and then the updates will come up, and you'll always know what's going on. But if you don't want all those events, just remember jahc.org, jack.org.
That's right. And it also, ktoo.org, we also have a link there. You can share this calendar. You can find it lots of places, all the goings on around town.
Yes, exactly.
Sandy Fortier, thank you so much for Arts Up. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks.
And coming up next here on Juno Afternoon is Bird Note.
If you're a parent and you smoke, here's what one child has to say about this.
I wish you'd quit smoking because there's so much of my life I want you to be a part of, like taking me to wrestling practice, teaching me how to throw a baseball for Little League, watching me graduate from high school, and watching my kids, your grandchildren, grow and play. There is so much both of us will miss out on.
This message is brought to you by Alaska Island Community Services, Search, your partner in health, and the Partnership for a Tobacco-Free Southeast.
There's a new meeting place in Juneau. At360 is a unique high-tech studio space for the community. For civic events, arts, cultural and music performances, town hall meetings, training classes, conferences, screenings, and more. If you are organizing an event for 20 to 80 and looking for a venue which is flexible and inviting, call us at 586-1670 or visit our website, ktoo.org/360space. At360, convene, converse, create. Juneau's multimedia space.
This is Bird Note. Let's eavesdrop on a group of bird watchers exploring a freshwater marsh.
Hey, green heron.
Green heron? Yeah, there's the green heron going up.
What exactly do bird watchers watch? How do they identify one species from another? Well, first, they look carefully at the bird. Don't get caught up flipping pages in your bird book until you have a clear idea of what you're looking for. What's the overall color? Is its bill long or short? Thin or stout? What about the bird's markings, like a ring around its eye or stripe on its head? What's your bird doing? Bird behavior can help you sort out one species from another. And where is your bird? What habitat? Like fishermen who know how to read the water, it helps to know where to look. You learn what to expect. At a wetland full of cattails, for example, you're likely to find a red-winged blackbird singing from atop a stalk. This bird requires dense marsh vegetation for its nest. By taking notes, you'll accumulate valuable knowledge to help you identify birds. Then, of course, there are those that are always going to be really hard to see. That's what makes it so exciting when you finally spot a bird like the elusive Virginia rail.
Oh, there he is.
There he is.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon this Thursday, July 10th. My name is Shona Strausser, and it has been a pleasure. Stay tuned tomorrow to Juno Afternoon at 3 p.m. Pat Moore hosts Wushkinadei, Open Mic and Poetry Slam. We'll talk about Sitka's Island Symposium, and Daring and Down will be here to talk about their concerts this week.
We are not talking about FIFA now because we are the Balas-